Hello.
Oh, yeah, I forgot about that part.
Go ahead.
Well, hello and good evening, everybody, and welcome to a very special episode of a podcast from the Deviant Legion Network. We are bringing back Down the Rabbit Hole this evening, and I am super, super fucking stoked to announce the people we have. My lover from another mother, Charles Moisson, a wonderful man who is part of the creative team behind Silver Phoenix Productions, Silver Phoenix Publishing.
Entertainment.
Yeah. Oh, that's changed. I was doing shit this week. Silver Phoenix Entertainment. Charles Moisson, who's going to tell us all about the amazing things he is doing right now. And please introduce yourself, Charles.
Good day. I am Charles D. Moisson of Silver Phoenix Entertainment, and we work to create things that are almost awesome.
And the guy laughing in the background obviously is my consummate phenom of a host, Carl Kaefer. Yay!
Greetings,
Carl, you've got to introduce yourself
tonight, so I'll be a little on the quiet side, but you'll hear me chuckling for sure.
Yeah, it's been a chuckle fuck fest for like the past 15 minutes. So, that does sound like a candy. The other wonderful, amazing part of this group that we have tonight is the incomparable Philo Barnhart.
Yay!
Hello, Philo.
Hello. Hello.
Yay! Fireworks! And I just want to tell everybody, this is not the thing that he is the best at, because he is best at being an amazing human being. But Philo came to a little bit of fame with a movie in the 80s that he animated a character for. Do you want to tell us who you animated?
Well, that would be The Little Mermaid, and starting in 1987. Yeah, and I'd made some other movies before that, but that one really put me on the map, so to speak.
We want to talk about those other movies tonight too, but if you've seen his name, it is most likely in reference to the fact that this is the guy that animated Ariel. Okay, like. My partner's childhood crush was the animated mermaid from Disney's The Little Mermaid. So this is kind of a big fucking deal for us, right? A lot of people what?
Takes a lot of people to make animation. I was one of many, many people. But, I had an important job, though, because I developed her for the final look for the screen. And just before that, I developed Ursula, along with Rob Minkoff and also Sebastian, with Duncan Marchbanks, who was the lead animator on Sebastian. So I was a busy boy back then.
busy body, you. So tell us about that.
I do have a question for Philo very quickly. I have a friend who's been on the podcast a number of times, John Kaufman. Would you know that name? Because he was also an animator. He particularly worked with Bash. You do know John. I'll be sure to tell John that we talked for sure.
Yeah. Well,
you should do a show with both Philo and him together and have a battle of the animation and have everybody draw, but nobody can see it because
audio. It's already in the works because I was exactly thinking that.
Smart.
Funny you mentioned Bakshi tonight because I found a bunch of Bakshi movies online today, earlier, that I didn't think existed anymore. You know, some of them were controversial.
Such as?
What was the name of that one? it's based on his early life because he grew up in the Bronx, I believe. So
right.
He was, as my back called, a ghetto product. So it's, you know, it's like tough guy directing animation, you know. I can't remember the name of the movie, but the other one was.
Well, there were a number. Cool. There was Heavy Traffic, Coonskin.
Fritz the Cat is another one that I didn't get to see again. And of course, there was the one with Kim Basinger as Hollywood.
Cool World.
Thank you. Yeah. Brad Pitt. Yeah. Yeah, very good.
Of course, my favorite backstory is Wizards. I friggin' love Wizards.
Yeah.
Which was a rip-off of Chief
like
Wizard.
Fire and Ice, too. Yeah. I actually like Fire and Ice and his version of Lord of the Rings also.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
So Charles, you said that Wizards was a rip-off of Von Bode?
Yes.
That's right. That's right. Uh-huh.
There's different stories
Bode.
About that. There's different stories, and all I can tell you is that from Bakshi's side, he actually still pays the Bode estate.
Wow.
And the other thing is that also that when it was done, he was going to sign a contract with Bode to give him money, but the wife nixed it or something like that. But that Bond was in the psychiatric hospital, and he made sure that a certain percentage of the profits went to pay for his hospitalization at the time. Now that's from back.
Wow.
Now, I've heard other stories from other people, so I don't know which one's true.
Before he passed away. Yeah, I knew Vaughn before he passed away. And my friend Garrett had a huge portrait of him in his house. And we were all friends.
And, well, I grew up in the 70s. And
when Vaughn passed away, Garrett had a dream that he was giving one of his cartoon concerts. And and they were flying by Garrett's head in the dark, you know, all these cartoons that he had done. And he finally said goodbye. And when Garrett woke up the next day, he got the word that Vaughn had passed away.
Yeah.
So he called me. But that was had to do with Chief Wizard, the character he was famous for.
As I said, I was born in 58. So in the early 70s, I was hitting puberty. And particularly in college, I was introduced to Cheech Wizard. And I fell in love with Von Bode and Cheech Wizard and his art. It's just an amazing, amazing artist. And I think in many ways, I'm glad Gareth is keeping his art alive very, very much. And I see posts from them.
Gareth in 1987 or so to cancer, so they're both gone now.
I guess it's just done then, or somebody is still doing, still showing Von Bode. I'd have to look it up on Facebook.
Yeah, well,
let me see.
It wouldn't be either one of us. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. Mr. Bode.
Yep.
No, Mr. Bode, who had a Bode, who danced around to pray.
Oh, geez. Here we go. Here we go, impromptu poetry.
Yes. By the way, here's something
Mark,
about Philo.
It's Mark, by the way. It's Mark Bode.
Yeah, Mark the Bode. But here's something interesting about Philo, is he's actually a second-generation Disney legend. His mother and father also worked for Disney.
Yes, that's right.
And that is something I was going to talk to you about.
Whoop. I moved too quick. I apologize.
Oh, no. Like, I'm loving it. I I know that your mother, I think, didn't just work for Disney, but also worked at Hanna-Barbera. We were going to have another animator on the show tonight, but he did not get back to me. But it was someone who knew you from... Huh?
Because he's chicken.
I mean, it's hard to contend with this amount of awesomeness, so I totally get it. No grudges held here.
Is this the grudge report? What's going on? I'm confused.
Yeah. Okay, so when he was talking to me and I asked if he knew you, Philo, he was like, oh, my God, we work together. I mean, kind of barely. Like, I remember him, but I don't think he'd remember me. But he also mentioned that he worked with your mother at, I believe, Hanna-Barbera. So not only do you have Disney fame, you did HB. Like, what did you do for that?
Well, it was a migratory business. It's not so much anymore. It's pretty much segregated now. But back then, you were free to move around. As long as you were a Cartoonist Union member, you know, you were free to go anywhere you wanted where the work was. So we followed the work. There really wasn't like a competition between studios. It just was what it was. You went and worked at Hanna-Barbera. There was a healthy season at Ruby Spears. You went over there. Patty Sealing, you went over there. I ended up at Don Bluth for 4 years. Helped them make their first feature. And then the video games, Dragon's Lair Space Ace and Dragon's Lair 2 of the Time Warp. And then eventually I worked my way up to Disney in 1983 with Winnie the Pooh and A Day for Eeyore. And right after that, The Black Cauldron and other things. So at Hanna-Barbera, I started in TV show animation.
So wait just a fucking second. Are you telling me you worked on The Black Cauldron?
Yes, I did in 1984. Uh-huh. It came out in 85.
I'm sorry, that's the incorrect phrase. It's being changed for the modern day.
Okay.
It's being changed.
Yeah,
you can't call
it
the Black Cauldron. It has to be African American Cauldron.
Oh. Sorry. You can't go there, man. That's awful. But either way, great fucking movie. I was born in 85, so that has been, you know, a part of my repertoire basically since I was born. And it's also one of those Disney movies that most people are like, they don't know about that one, but when they see it, it's amazing.
Yeah,
it's like
it was considered a bomb at the time, and it's actually gained an audience now. You know, more recently, people are becoming aware of it, and it's actually become one of their favorite films from Disney. Oddly enough.
Yeah, they shied away from it for so long that I remember for like half of my life, you could not find this movie and Disney would not talk about it. It's like, yeah, we did this animated movie about some trolls and shit, but that's it.
Well, the primary reason they wouldn't bring it out is because they didn't think it would make them any money. That's the honest truth. They just didn't think it would make any money. But thankfully that all changed, and I think it's even on Blu-ray now. So.
It is. It got such a massive cult following, and I remember when that happened because when I was, you know, a teenager / young adult, I was looking for that movie, and I couldn't find it anywhere.
Right.
And that's, you know, early days of the internet and all that. I was looking for any references of it, and people were like, yeah, I've seen this movie. I swear to God it was by Disney, but I can't find it anywhere. And now Disney's like, yeah, The Black Cauldron. We did that shit. It's awesome, ain't it? Give us more dollars.
Uh-huh. It's actually, in the scheme of things, it's only the second widescreen animated feature from Disney ever, the 70mm or scope process, which I think they referred to as VistaVision sometimes, as per Buena Vista. Yeah, which is their releasing company.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Carl and I are both the weirdos who watch the opening and closing credits in movies, so I will verify that,
yeah.
But that's not the only thing that makes us weirdos. We just want you to know that.
Yeah, I appreciate it because people are on their way halfway to their car in the parking lot by the time they get around to my credits. I appreciate it.
So how about you, Charles?
What?
See? Well, I mean, you're here tonight, too, and you have also done some animation. It's
yes.
Not I don't think that you've done, like, moving animation. You are more of an illustrator of a bunch of fucking amazing comic books and graphic novels. I think you're even your own supervillain. Somebody else made you a supervillain. It's their
yes,
comic
so many
book
people
series.
Do.
I think
there's a recent comic book called Long Pig done by some dudes. I forgot their names. I don't have it in front of me. But I'm supposedly a victim that Long Pig is after, but I fight back. And I do support a lot of Kickstarter things. I did work on She-Ra years ago as an inker
Which
and painter.
She-Ra? The original
The one where the one where she's hot looking, where everybody wants her.
I mean, you do realize that She-Ra is back now. And
yeah,
my...
I know. It's like a cute little kid, and you can't lust after her because that would be too creepy.
Yeah, I love the new She-Ra.
Oh, well.
Yeah, the
it
new
is
She-Ra
great.
Is kind of fun.
The LGBTQ representation is just fucking phenomenal. I have to say that.
It was impressive.
It was what?
Impressive.
Okay.
Yeah, I thought it was impressive.
I thought so, too. And it was because my almost 12-year-old non-binary kid made me watch this show. I love cartoons, obviously. I'm so stoked to have you two animators here with us tonight. So when
did
I saw that, I was...
Did you have a chair like Clockwork Orange to watch the
no.
show? Is that what he did?
No, they
or
didn't.
They did? Or he did?
No, they did not have to do that for me because I was actually impressed by the new
you're
iteration.
You're a scary mom.
Yeah, well... You should see me at home sometimes. But yeah.
Boy.
So you
worked
on
She-Ra?
Wasn't
this how we met? Yeah.
Oh.
I did Ping. I did that cute little rainbow creature. You know, can you find me? La, la, la. I was
Very good.
Yeah, for Dennis Kennedy of Kennedy Studios in Omaha, Nebraska, when I tried to disappear, and this guy took pity on me. He actually let me animate for him for a while. And it wasn't animation. It was more just the scut work of inking and painting. So Philo's mom and I have something in common. We've been inker and painters. She actually worked on Star Trek, the animated series, as well as Song of the South. But I just worked on She-Ra.
Right. She did that just before we moved to New Mexico. In 1973 or so. Yeah.
Oh, good. That's the one that you can't find anywhere, even on Disney Plus. Let me tell you.
Oh, it's there in a secret
tough
way.
To get the DVDs. There are
you
DVDs,
up?
Though.
Yeah.
Yes, and they are very highly, highly treasured at this point. Trust me, I have looked for them because I do remember that one, and I like to keep stuff like that as a reminder, as kind of
with your Hitler action figure.
Well, I didn't realize this initially, but it was also the start of the careers of the people I worked with eventually at Don Bluth's studio, Lorna Pomeroy, who was then Lorna Smith, and Don Bluth himself worked on the show, and my friend Jeff Fetter worked on the show before he ended up at Bluth's. So all these people got their feet wet even before they got to Disney in between 71 and 73. They worked on that show.
It was actually a Bluth animator that was supposed to be here with us tonight, but I know he's busy right now. And I
he's eating pelican meat.
Well, that's
he's eating pelican meat. He's scared of us.
Well, yeah. Like I said, happens to
okay.
us. But
all right, Ned.
So
could you imagine he's like, I'm going to eat this pelican. I live by the sea. Arr, no SpongeBob's for you.
And who lives in a pineapple under the sea? So when it comes down to it, like I personally, I have a really deep connection with Don Bluth films, because like I said, I was born in 1985. So my entire childhood was Don Bluth films, and I grew up with a mother who did not give me the Disney version of fairy tales. I learned the real Grimm's fairy tales. And yeah, I got to watch Disney movies, but when you hear how fucked up the stories really are, like, Disney does not care.
They're
I mean,
supposed to instruct children how to behave themselves. Basically, they had to learn from them.
Oh, absolutely.
They go to some dark places.
They went to some really dark places. I actually still have this
Pinocchio
book. It's called The Grimm's Grimmest. And their shortest one is There
That's
Was
awesome.
A Little Girl with a Curl in Her Hair. That's the name of the poem. And it's like eight lines long. There was a girl with a curl in her hair who pissed her mom and dad off. And then she died. The end.
Yay!
How delightful.
That's
then you had Mr.
Christian
Anderson
long.
With the...
You
had the little match girl and the little mermaid who both dropped dead by the end of the story. So.
And they don't just drop dead. They drop dead horrendously, painfully. Like, freezing to death... Is not a comfortable death. You don't just drift off into the ever after sleep. Like, it hurts.
Nope.
And the same thing with the Little Mermaid.
It hurts like a
with
son of a...
the thing they don't show you in most of the movies is the part of the curse where it's every step she took felt like she was stepping on a
Grimm
was so enamored with her dancing that she literally spent 3 days dancing for this dude, even though every step felt like she was walking on broken glass, and he still goes for the thought. I mean,
you know why?
He was a true asshole.
He did that?
He was a true
She's
asshole.
A masochist.
No, he was an asshole.
By the way, just so you guys know, I also grew up in basically Eastern European family. And Baron Munchausen was one thing, you know, all those stories I grew up with. Also, The Soldier and Death and Russian fairy tales, which are extremely dark.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Right. That's
nice.
That's how they kept the kids in line, you know.
Oh, absolutely. That was the whole point.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I'm
There's
interested
even stories
to know.
Like that for adults.
I'm interested to know what Bluth films you worked on, because since we got into this like whole morality tale and. I genuinely believe that children are a lot smarter and more emotionally capable than most adults these days give them the credit for. Because the kids are advanced.
I think kids are more advanced now than they've ever been.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But I watch stuff like all of these Don Bluth films. I watch, you know, The Black Cauldron. I watched All Dogs Go to Heaven. And let's be honest, any Don Bluth film I've ever seen, and I do own, like, almost the entire collection. I mean, I've even got We're Back and all that shit, all of it. And both of my children, one of which is 12, one of which is 4, have grown up watching these movies and love them. And
very good.
I want to know which Bluth films you worked on. Like, this is very interesting to me because they're such interesting movies.
When I first got there, they were finishing up the sequence in Xanadu, the live-action movie with Gene Kelly and Olivia Newton-John and John Beck.
Yep.
Right.
And I rather enjoyed it. Everyone else thought it was silly, but because we went to the rap party, and none of the main actors were there, but the dancers from the film were there. So I got to meet Sandahl Bergman before she did Conan the Barbarian and then Red Sonja. So I got to meet her when she was fresh and new in the business, and she was really cool. They all were. The dancers were really cool. But there's a small sequence in the film. Jeff Lynne, who wrote the score, or at least some of the songs, the others were written by Olivia's regular songwriter. But Jeff Lynne wrote half of the score for the movie, and there was this clunky, still kind of a pretty song, but it was clunky. It was called Don't Walk Away. So rather than try to scrap it, which he wouldn't allow them to do contractually, he says, you find a way to put it in the film. So they asked Don Bluth if he would animate something depicting the romance developing between the two characters, and that's how that came to be. So I was coming in just at the end of that, and got to go to the rap party and see the movie, and I loved it. But we started on Secret of Nim. That was our first one. And I worked very hard on that film, and I learned a lot because I'd only done the television animation before that. And there's not much to that, really. It's limited, you know, the way it moves. And you're only dealing with a stack of drawings that get shot over and over again, you know.
I'm having a fangirl heart attack right now. Sorry.
Yeah.
I'm seriously choking.
So
fucking Secret of Nim.
Yeah. I really wanted to learn how the full animation was done for movies. So, boy, I got an eyeful. I learned a lot from those folks. They'd been trained by Disney. So I was just all enthused. And I was on fire for that whole film. I just cranked that stuff out. So the first sequence we did was The Great Owl. And down the road, I got to do voices.
He still creeps me out.
Incidental rap. I got to do voices of incidental rap in the film, and one of them you can hear quite clearly towards the end of the movie when the block starts to sink and Mrs. Bisbee's leaning up against it, and she reacts. She says, sinking. It's sinking just in the block. It's sinking. Right after she says that, you'll hear a rap say, throw the line, Justin. That's me.
Oh, my God. You're a voice actor, too? Jesus Christ.
And I'm other rats early in the film, too, when they're having a debate and so on. But I would change my voice slightly. We all did, so that we were a multitude of rats. But right after that, we went into the video games. Dragon's Lair was first. We thought we'd go right into another film, but we actually enjoyed the games a great deal because we didn't have to care so much what they looked like because the action was so fast. I hate to say it, but we weren't as anal retentive on that as we were, the films. So there was a bad drawing in there. No one was ever going to see it, if you know what I mean. So I also did voices in the games. So that was a lot of fun. But we had some time off, and then I got called back to work on American Tail. So I went over to Disney and finished The Cauldron with them. And I went back to Bluth for a while, and I only lasted 3 weeks on American Tail. And then I went back to Hanna-Barbera, actually, and I did another season of Smurfs and a new show called Galtar and the Golden Lance and another new show called The Pawpaw, these little three-inch-tall bears that were like Native American bears. And a very weird show, but I enjoyed working.
Did you say The Pawpaw?
After that, it was over to Filmation to make their two films. The only two that they were able to do, The Pinocchio and The Emperor of the Night, and Snow White, Happily Ever After. And then literally right into Mermaid. I left Filmation on a Friday. I was literally the last person there because they closed their doors and they laid everyone off. I was correcting footage along with the director. I was repairing animation that wasn't working. And as soon as I was done, I finished that Friday, and I walked into Disney Studio on the following Monday, October 29th, 1987. I remember it well. And I was in Little Mermaid Land. I loved it. And I stayed with Disney for a long time after that. Yeah. So that's
crazy,
my,
huh?
That's my
Have you ever heard of the movie Star Trek, the motion picture?
Which one?
Star Trek.
Yeah, I saw that he worked on Star Trek.
That was actually my first film. I went on hiatus from Hanna-Barbera in 79, and I worked for several weeks on the film to help get it done.
So what did you do for Star Trek, the motion picture?
Yeah.
Special effects I'd never done before, but I found I enjoyed those. They were organic, so I didn't have to worry so much how they looked because they were going to be very transitory, you know, only a few seconds on the screen. And you were trying to mimic electricity and things like that, which is all over the place. So that was actually not as hard as I thought it was going to be. You just had to make sure that things lined up where they were supposed to end up, you know, over the other pieces of film that they had shot. So that was the only problem that you had to solve, was make sure that you had lined up when they combined everything optically onto one piece of film. So, and I spent many hours
still
tracing off frames of film. The first time I did it, of course, the film backed up in the projector above me, and it came out like a jack-in-the-box. Splatoing.
Oh, my God. So my first ever job was at a movie theater, and the only time I ever tried to use the projector at the movie theater, that exact same thing happened to me. It just...
Oh, my God. Well, this thing jammed while I was advancing the frame. And I had no idea what was going on inside there. So,
that was it. I was trying to splice the two reels together, and I got it just off enough that it started buckling over itself. And frankly, I'm really glad they were just trying to train me, and I did not scar anybody with that fucked up disaster that started happening on the screen in front of us. But. Yes. I mean, have you, like, retired from this kind of animation? Are you still doing stuff like this? Like, I personally see a little bit of what you're doing. And guys on the show, really quickly, you can find him on Facebook, Philo Barnhart Art. He's amazing. You can commission pieces from him. I know that. But what are you guys doing with yourself right now, these days?
Oh, I'll let Charles take that. Yeah.
Charles is a man.
I am now taking over the computers and all that you hear.
Well, what's been really
all your
interesting...
base are belong to us.
I think we hit the limit here and it's outer. Okay, go ahead.
Really? Oh, my God.
Yes.
Wait, this guy's so quiet. Did you have him tied up and, you know, and you, like, muzzle him and allow him to talk once in a while? Is that what's going on, Rachel? You don't feel bad.
Yeah, that happens. You kind of have to muscle Charles down sometimes.
Well, Philo, proudly, for the most part, has retired, and so he's enjoying getting to finally relax after working so hard. However, he is still willing to do
animation.
Some conventions.
Mm-hmm.
Say again, Philo?
I'm doing a little animation for my friend who's written a Broadway show.
Yes. His name is Gary,
Gary
Schomer. And he owns Northeastern Comic Con, the one on the East Coast in like South Hadley, Mass, or something like that. And what he does is he takes over defunct JCPenney's, and he just spreads out. And you have your comic book shop in a nice store. I like going by the women's lingerie when I set up. Well, but
you
I never can find any for Philo. But that's one thing. So we still make appearances. And what I did during COVID was I was actually hired, Silver Phoenix was, by the American Indian Health Services of Chicago. And I created a COVID comic book. What I can do is I can give you a link for the comic book so you can give it away for free to everybody, Rachel, if that's something that you so desire. And this helps.
I would absolutely love that. We do try to make an effort.
Way,
yeah.
Sorry. No, go ahead, and I'm just going to pop in here for a second.
No, go ahead, Carl.
No, do by the way. I like by the way.
Hold on.
Speak. Do as I say. This is my show. You will do as I say.
Okay,
speak
so,
now.
So I just wanted to let both of you know that at the end of the show, we want you to promote everything that you've done. Where can we get them, so on and so forth. That's what this show is about, is promotion, too, and for you guys.
We're going to talk about Outer Planet Panic. We're going to talk about all of that. And actually, that is something I was going to ask you about, Charles, is here in the past 2 years, I've known you for what? Oh, my God.
Seven years.
7 or 8 years, yeah. We met at a Comic-Con.
I knew you when you
were
120 instead of 95 pounds.
Yeah. So,
you were doing something recently that
got a lot of big news. What is it? Haunted Tales of Bachelor's Grove?
Okay, well, I do multiple projects and multiple things. One comic book is The Haunting Tales of Bachelor's Grove, written by the brilliant Brian K. Morris and myself at some times. And they work with various different artists around the world. And we take the spin from the real haunted cemetery that's in Middle Lothian, Illinois. It has a haunted house, haunted lake, and a haunted cemetery. And so what I did was
just for everybody listening out there, this is a real fucking place in the world that is really fucking haunted, apparently.
Yeah. And you can actually lose time in there. I did.
Weird stuff. I once fell down on the ground, and all of a sudden I felt the ground sinking, and then all of a sudden I see the shape of a grave around me, and then my back starts itching, and then when I get out, my friend pointed at me, and I had close to thousands of grave mosquitoes on my back drinking my blood. And I had this horrible infection where my back looked like the worst case of acne for weeks. And I felt ill for a while. And then another time we were out there and we found human femur bones, like sawed in the middle. And they were making a trail. On that one, we actually called the police. And a forensic said that they were all female femur bones from the 1800s. It was very, very bizarre. Yeah.
So
and,
also, can you tell us who you're working with for the Haunted Tales of Bachelor's Grove?
Oh, there are so many people. I keep forgetting. Remind me, because I'm dumb. I work with Yeah.
I can never remember because it's really hard to pronounce.
I know so many names. Well, there's Aljotha Tahomic, who does my coloring. There's sometimes I draw. There's Claudio in Mexico. There's who else? There's so many people. But I'm currently rebuilding my website.
Oh, my God, Charles. So, the woman that the comic book is based on.
What?
Paranormal expert.
Katrushka. Well, also Ron Fitzgerald. Yeah, those are two buddies of mine. So we thought it'd be fun to turn Katrushka Onikaro and Ron into characters. I also created a character based off of your personality. Her name is Lilith Yeager, and she is a psychopath who's married to a Republican congressman.
Married to a what?
A Republican congressman. And the only reason why she hasn't murdered yet is she hates the color orange, but she likes her hair, which is orange, so it's a contradiction. But her deal is enjoys becoming a murder addict when she accidentally kills a demon possessed a human. And in that world, if you kill a demon possessed human, they turn to dust. So she loves killing monsters because she can get away with it. You know, unlike killing humans, and the challenge is a lot more interesting. There's like one story where she actually teams up with a quote serial killer, and he's like, "Hey, you want a better challenge?" And she almost became a victim. But when this serial killer realized she was like him, they thought, "Okay, let's team up." They try to battle this dark monster, and she defeats it. And they go back to his car, and you know, there's a victim in his trunk, and he just looks to the victim and looks at her and said, "I'd rather just stay with humans." And she shrugs and nods and says, "Okay, I understand." She walks away.
So I don't know if this is a confession of your undying love for me or if it's your secret confession that you're a fucking serial killer on the side.
No.
I'm totally here for it.
Yeah. So Yeager loves hunting. And her name, Lilith Yeager, Lilith can also be translated into monster, and Yeager is Norwegian for hunter. So she's a monster hunter. So I do that with names, like Hasir Ciencia means to make science, and that was a gadgeteer guy in one of my comic books called Kremen that I did years ago, one of my first forays doing superhero comics. That's one of my... spooky books, Haunting Tales of Bachelor's Grove. I'm also doing my first fantasy book.
Yes?
The Cockerel's Fist.
Okay, what is this?
Well, imagine a D&D-type universe where a bunch of people go to this bar, and the weird thing about this bar is nobody can physically fight. You could be the most darkest demon underlord, fighting the most holiest good god, and you cannot come to physical blows in the bar or within 100 feet of the bar. And so basically the battle is to tell a better story that's true. And these idiots who own the bar just, you know, give everybody food for free. You know, they don't care. They're just dumb. But people, to show off, will leave some of their treasures there. They're like, "Yes, I got this dragon head from blah, 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 blah. Well, yeah, well, my story is blah, 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 blah." So basically your payment for the food is telling a really good story. And I'm working with Peter Jones, who has done various writings, and he's done the lead writing and one of his buddies. And we together have come up with a fantasy. So the main character, Ilka, is a bastard princess who unwittingly made a deal with an evil dragon. Instead of becoming a sacrifice, became its buddy, and they slaughtered the kingdom. And now some of the good people are after her and hunting her. And the only reason why she doesn't have a last name is that bastards are not allowed to have a last name because she is royalty. And when she just gives them a first name, it's a way that everybody knows that she's a royal bastard. And, and she's also a magic user. She's very weak. She gets sickly and whatnot, but it's a lot of fun. And we decided to have a monk character who's a non-binary, which is hysterical, so nobody can tell whether they're male or female. We also, you know, have a bard and you know, the other type of you know, similar type of fantasy guys, and we're building that up to eventually show off a game, which after this takes off, I plan to do the ultimate adventure of the Cockroach Fist. And,
well,
and
speaking of games, Charles, don't you actually have a game on Kickstarter right now?
No, no, not yet. I'm building up to it.
Outer Planet Panic.
Yes, yes, yes. Right. Outer Planet Panic is a game where everybody works together to stab each other in the back, and only one can win.
Exactly, and that's what I'm saying, is you have a game that is literally you are Kickstarter funding right now, and I want to tell people
about it. Well, I'm building up a mailing list, so it's not live yet, but it's I got to build up a good mailing list so that we can succeed, because I need to raise maybe, you know, about 30 to 40,000 for this thing.
Okay.
So I have a landing page. If you go to outerplanetpanic.com, what some of my buddies and I, like Pascal did, Tom Green, Scott Richardson, and Jerry Jackson, we came up with this idea for a space game where everybody digs for something, for ancient artifacts. And the real goal is to build an ultimate device to take over the galaxy. So instead of like actual combat and things like that, it's espionage, stealing, deal making,
like
money
page.
Changing, research and development. So it teaches you math. So it could be considered educational because it's real world stuff. You could be working with your best friend and then you got to stab him in the back to win.
I mean.
And you could build.
So,
do you want to hear some of the ultimate devices?
Sure.
So this is awesome.
Okay.
I'm actually on outerplanetpanic.com
right now.
Yes. Yes. I'm currently working
on
building that
animation.
Site more. Thank you. We decided to go with, and Philo, thank you for the suggestion when you did, but we decided to go with a Jack Kirby homage style. So when you play the game, you feel like you're literally in a 60s comic book.
I was just about to say that, like, oh my God, it's so comic book.
And
I was, I was an artist
in
high school and all that. Ultraviolet what?
It's going to be an ultraviolet ink, too, like blacklight posters. From the 60s.
Yeah. So
oh
I'm going
to. Oh my God, I have to have all of these.
Yes, yes. So for example, we have dinosaurs yelling at you, and that's considered middle management. So that's a card. We got weird objects that can do weird things, ranging from stealing time to resurrecting undead to mind control. And one of the ultimate devices is so powerful that you could walk it on a black hole and crush it with your fist if you so choose to, thus destroying the black hole permanently.
This
That's
is amazing, and I'm in a super, super heavy board game family, and I'm not talking about Life and Monopoly.
I have sent
Carl pictures of my closet full of – I actually have the second iteration of Wiz War from the 70s all the way up to new stuff. Yeah. Most of them are my partners, but some of them are mine. And this right here, like I – seriously, guys, you need to go to outerplanetpanic.com just to see this artwork because it is so Roy Lichtenstein, it's uncanny. And he was my focus in my AP art classes. He was the artist I was trying to emulate. So, like, this is amazing. I am so happy, and I really hope you guys get this Kickstarter going and make this game happen.
We are working hard on it, and I'm trying to figure out the best that I can do. No offense to China. China is a great place. They've been excellent to Philo. He's traveled there. They treat him like a god. you know, things like that. You know, there are many conventions. I'm unfortunately banned from international travel, so until I can give the government about $90,000, I cannot leave.
It's because you're a creepy weirdo motherfucker, and we love you anyway. But
yeah, but
like
you're stuck Jason in the Spriggs. Yeah, Jason Spriggs. He did a poster for Outer Planet Panic, and what's really fun is that you could be different races. For example, the humans are so different that they can literally change gender or race within a 2-week period with some of their systems, and for depending on the mission, they will change literally. And so, the concept of race, sexuality, is non-existent. It's unimportant. It's illusionary. It's indifferent. The term for male is long urethred, and the term for female is short urethred, and that's it. And you know, there may be some missions where it is better for the body to be feminine or feminish, and vice versa. But the concept of male and female are so blurred, it's no longer exists with the way the humans are. And we have insect race, robot race. Yeah.
That is a really interesting concept for a game. And
yeah,
I just want to say that in the times we're in now, where LGBTQ inclusion is so fucking important, I mean, especially to me and a lot of people I know, obviously, that is kind of awesome. Like, that might be the first board game that I buy and actually really desperately want to play with people. Like, I will play board games, whatever. I'm not always into it, but fine. If that's what you want to do for the night, we'll do that. But no, that's a really interesting storyline and really inclusive in a way that I haven't seen yet.
Well, the thing about that is, with no offense, LGBT is not existent. It's unimportant. It just, you know, there isn't the separation of race, sexuality, and identity. The thing that is important is your mind and quantum recording of your mind. You know, for example, they have a form of cloning. Yeah. So,
what I'm saying is I have a non-binary kid. So my child does not affirm with any gender. And and that's why this is so important, because even though they don't confirm any gender for themselves, they're still considered part of the LGBTQ community.
Right.
And seeing representation like that is, it's not something I've seen before, and I'm really, it is unheard of, and I am, again, so here for it.
Well, thank you. You know, and
he's unique,
but, go on, Philo.
He is unique.
Yeah. You know, and you know, like, go to Outer Planet Panic, sign up on the Kickstarter, you know, thing. And like I said, after I reach 1,000 people, then that's when I plan to launch. I'm also, need to build a funnel page, so I'm working on that. And I went to WordPress, so I've destroyed my website, silverphoenix.net. It looks like
at it yesterday.
It's embarrassing. So go to waybackmachine.org and look at silverphoenix.net. There are a couple people who are going to, you know, help me with this, because WordPress is hard. I mean, HTML is easy. It's like, okay, you just type out code. Boom. It appears the way you want. The old way, when you had Word Perfect or Word, you know, the opposite of Microsoft Word, you had the one that all the lawyers used, you know, years ago, the Corel one.
Yes.
The Corel Word. I forgot what it's called.
Yeah.
But back then, you used to have to program how your letter was going to look. You know, it was like an early form of HTML, the old way of doing, Word Perfect or something like that. Maybe that's it, Word Perfect.
Yes, Grandpa, but, like, even me, I'm still confused by the new internetings these days. So did try to look at your website, and that was something I was going to mention because I've known you for a long-ass time. I don't frequently check out your website because, like, I get your updates on the regular. So I did go to look at it yesterday. It is embarrassing, but I did see on part of the page where it says that it is currently being restructured.
Yeah.
And it was very apologetic. So yes.
Because I'm dumb. I'm on the dumb list. Philo's on the smart list. He worked on all the good films. Charles is on the dumb list. He works on all the weird comic books.
Well, the weird comic books
and
are why I love you guys. It's actually how I met you guys. So thank you for that.
I also sponsor roller derby.
Yes. If anybody wants to hear a really weird story, I can tell you about how Philo, Charles, and myself all know each other, and that is because I was a booth babe at a Comic-Con.
Oh my god!
Here in my home state.
Yeah, yeah.
And I was tasked with going around to the group of booths that were connected to our table and making sure that the artists and everybody didn't need anything. If they did need something, it was my job to go find it. And
so why didn't you ask the prostitute?
Exactly. I was an unpaid prostitute for comic books. It happened.
I remember correctly, you made sure that I ate. I remember you made sure that I ate something.
Yes, I wanted to make sure that you ate something. I brought you guys donuts and then told you about some very good Chinese restaurants that you could go to after the convention. But I saw some of the drawings that Charles had done for a comic book that he was working on at the time that involved roller derby girls. And I was in the roller derby very briefly for a short, strange period in my life.
The past period, the hottest period, the oh my God, I love you period.
And so Charles was like, wait, you were in the roller derby? And he had been skating around the whole convention center in his roller skates all day. And he had me put on his roller skates.
My zip lock,
which, by the way,
skates.
Yes, they were glorious and they were wonderful, but they were also literally twice the size of my foot. But he wanted to get action shots of a real former roller derby girl. And I am not going to lie, I almost broke my wrist. I did broke my ass bone and my coccyx, as it's called. I broke my coccyx. I almost broke my wrist. And I almost got a divorce that night. So it was like the best night of my life.
Yeah, it's like, come on, I didn't try hard enough. So what was really funny was I wear size four, those skates are size 14. Me and my feet are like between a 14 and a 15, you know, which, you know, what they say, big hands, big feet, ooh la la, a good understanding. But what was amazing was seeing you in my Ziploc skates working on these giant boat boots where you look like Queen Bozo the Clownette on skates. And instead of having normal skate wheels, what I did was I had a friend of mine, Richard, I forgot his last name, but he made a custom designed skate where you used speed skate wheels that are 100 millimeter and thin instead of the normal quad skate. So I had speed skate wheels on a quad truck. So she literally became 6'1" while wearing my shoes.
She was able to look me in the eye, and she couldn't believe it. She was like, I'm so tall. I love your skates. Oh, my God. This is great. But, oh, my God, they're so cheesy big. They're so big.
I'm
5'6",
by the way. Like, these skates were massive. So I am a short person. Not short, necessarily.
Short
apparently
on
teenager. Wow. That, definitely. So I was a short person, and yeah, these skates were fucking massive. And they were speed skates, which I was used to using because, you know, I'd been doing it for a while. And
right, they were quad.
It was just weird because they were twice the size of my foot, and that's how I broke my ass and almost broke my wrist, almost got a divorce.
Yeah.
And by the way, after I left that night, I went to my car in the parking lot, and somebody had smashed the rear view mirror off of my car.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, what?
So weird.
Mike,
so
your state is weird.
Yeah, Arkansas's really weird. But you did say you had some of the best Chinese of your life out here. So
yes,
I'm
we
just
did,
gonna...
right, Kylo?
Yeah, it was very good. Yeah.
You know, and we wish we could have brought you, you know, with us. And at the time, even your hub, but he seemed too angry at the time that we were having fun. He's like, why are you having fun? It's my wife. She's happy, and that's not allowed.
Yeah. Well, thankfully, that's my ex-husband now. So we don't have
Yay,
to worry about that shit.
He's my ex-husband. Chop, 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 chop. Another thing that I do is not only do I sponsor Roller Derby, the Chicago Outfit Roller Derby team, and now that this COVID crap might be over, I might be able to finally start to set up at their teams again. I've done charity work. And, Fado and I are going to be going to conventions again, so we're really looking forward to that. But both Fado and I have worked on a friend's book called Jeffrey Whittingham. And he does, it's his property is Hayden's Alley, and he does video game history books. This guy is amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and he finds the weird stuff.
Did you just say video game history books? Like,
yeah.
Is that the fucking thing?
I did.
Yeah.
I did a Nintendo book for him. I did a cover for him. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Nintendo
Oddities
and Homebrew Revolution.
Yeah. So basically, like, things like Strip Fighter, where it's like a Street Fighter clone, except your girls, and as you're fighting, your clothes comes off, and your goal is to get the other one naked. That is a homebrew game, and all this other stuff. So what Fowler and I did was I came up with some rough drawings, and he did the finishes, and he did a great job. And for Jeffrey, that book like sold like wildfire. And I was going to work on a book for him recently doing illustrations, but because I ended up having to teach and got too busy with the comics again, I wasn't able to do that. So he's unfortunately had to get another artist, but I would love to work on his books one day. But
when you say homebrewed games, like there's literally someone in my house right now playing The Binding of Isaac. Is that kind of what you mean by a homebrewed game?
That might be in his book.
You can see my you can see my cover on the art page on Facebook.
Yeah.
In my photos.
On Philo Barnhart Art?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome.
You have to look for
it. But Hayden Valley. Look for Hayden Valley. Then you could find that.
Awesome. Well, you guys have been like... Yes?
I've also done hot sauce labels.
Hot sauce labels?
Yeah, if you go to Silk City Hot Sauce, Silk City Hot Sauce, I work with a Jeff Levine out of Vermont, and we come up with some crazy stuff. Okay. Are you by your Facebook thing where I can just message you?
Yeah.
Rachel? Okay. All right. What I'm going to do... Oh, you became a pumpkin again, right? Yeah, you keep changing it between a rainbow flag and a pumpkin. But
okay,
I'm
that
gonna
is
give you
literally the first time I've changed my Facebook picture in 10 years, okay?
No,
I had the same picture
for
10 years.
I like the
okay.
pumpkin.
Yes. Hey, Rachel, take a look at what I just sent you.
All right, pulling it up right now.
And describe
it. Hot sauce shit. So, it's called Demon Blood.
Yes, because it's made with scorpion peppers.
Drenched in the sins of the damned. Is this a hot sauce label?
Yes.
Okay.
So we
can
order this, yeah?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Can we get the information, like, where we can find this hot sauce? Because, holy shit, I want it just for the picture.
Yes. Yeah, in fact, Jeff and I,
that,
and I work with my artist.
Is that the one lighting the fire?
Oh, you want me to show the one where I set the guy on fire? Oh, I got to go back to that.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that one's killer hot. So basically what I do is I have all these women doing horrible stuff to men. Oh, okay, we're sending you another one right now, Rachel.
Okay, well, just for the audience sake here, is there a website we can order this hot sauce from?
Yes, Silk City Hot Sauce, I think. Let me just look. It's on Facebook,
checking
too.
It.
SILKCITY. Maybe it's SilkCity.com or Silk City Hot Sauce.
All right. Well, we'll come back to that.
Yeah.
I'm looking right now, guys. I'm looking right now. Okay, hold on.
Is that crazy? My favorite is Slurp, where you got this hot, juicy woman on the beach eating a peach and it's dribbling down her chin, and she's succulent looking, and she looks like she's ready for action.
Okay,
but it looks like...
So it's actually an Etsy thing. It looks like it's LevinskyStockShelf.com/SilkCityHotSauce.
Yeah.
Okay. And there's also a Facebook page.
Silk City Hot Sauce page.
Yeah.
They've got a Facebook page. Oh, you saw the Facebook page, right? Hold on.
Say that again?
I'll try to send it to you.
Well, either way, these labels are freaking amazing, and they will look perfect next to my my beer bottles that I keep. I have a weird collection of glassware, and some of them are the Arrogant Bastard Ales.
No.
Okay, I just have to ask a question here. I'm on their website.
Finally.
Okay. Did you do the label for Badass Jew?
No, I did not. It's still pretty cool.
Okay. Well, I have to buy that for a friend of mine. Just have to.
Get it. Because it's good to have a Badass Jew in your back pocket.
Absolutely. Friggin'
lootly. Yes. Another thing that Philo and I, and we, okay, this is nuts with how you know, I get connected with people. Philo has weird connections, so do I. But Philo is friends with a guy called Vic Mignogna. Right, Philo?
Vic Mignogna, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And what does he do, Philo?
He does the American voices for anime cartoons. That's most of what he's known for. But he's been in some live-action things. You know, he's acting all the time. And he created the online fan TV show Star Trek Continues, in which he also plays Captain Kirk. So it's really wonderful.
What animes did he voice?
Go ahead, Philo. I couldn't tell you because I'm not really up on that, but maybe Charles
Full Metal
knows.
Alchemist. He's Ed.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Thank you.
The short guy.
Mm-hmm.
Who gets mad when you say he's short. Oh, my God. Rachel is stunned into silence. She's fangirling in nerd silence right now.
I really am right now.
I'm impressed that you've done that with Rachel. I'm just saying.
I love Vic.
Yeah.
But if you want to...
at least I haven't
squealed
in your ears yet, because I already know you guys. But I swear to God, if we saw each other in person again.
if people would care to see their official page, it's the Star Trek Continues group on Facebook.
When you watch this show, and I'm building up to something that's really cool. When you watch these shows, Star Trek Continues, you literally feel like you're watching season 4 and 5
of
the Starship Enterprise.
From the 1960s.
Lighting. Go on, Philo.
No lie. Spot on. Yeah.
The lighting is correct. The music, though original, feels perfect. The shots are downplayed.
Now, I've only seen some of that show, and it was a long time ago, but I will say that within the past year, me and all of my family, so my partner and my two kids, 12 and 4, watched all of the Star Trek. Like, we've binged every fucking Star Trek. We've done Picard. We've done Discovery. We've done all of it. And that is the one that I haven't seen all of the way yet. But I do remember watching it. I'm going to, and I do remember watching it when I was younger. So do you guys know maybe... like, what platform it's available on right now?
YouTube.
You mean the original show? The original show? YouTube, you can order all 3 seasons digitally and watch them over the internet. I don't think they're all that expensive. Yeah.
Well, Carl, if you're in front of your computer, maybe you can go to Just Watch and see if there's any other streaming services that it's available on right now.
Okay. Yeah. Netflix. What are we looking for again?
Are you looking
for the series?
Or
the original
I'm talking about?
Okay. What specific series of Star Trek?
The animation.
The first one, the original series.
Okay, the animated. Okay, thank you.
The animated?
That's what I mean.
Okay. There's the animated, but the first one was the live
action.
That's
one his mom worked on. Philo's mom worked on it.
Yeah. Before we moved to New Mexico for 2 years.
Yeah. All right. Well,
how nice is this?
Right?
Okay, but now the reason why I brought up Star Trek Continues is, you know, you can watch the shows. It feels like the old Star Trek, but they have a real studio. Is it in Kingstown, Georgia, or Kingston, Georgia? Philo.
I think it's Kingsland or something like that.
Maybe, yeah, Kingsland. I think it's Kingsland, Georgia. So you walk into this place, and it literally feels like you are on the Starship Enterprise because they reconstructed the Desiree Lucy set that they used to have in California almost detail for detail. They even found some of the old bottles from the 60s. They had, you know, this made. They found this material, you know, that material, so on and so forth, where they, you know, it is a living, functioning, incredible studio. Now, there's a sister studio, and they're actually rivals, in Ticonderoga, New York. That one is a beautiful museum, and you don't touch anything. It's beautiful. It's lovely. But this one, you can go and literally film a TV show or a movie or whatever you want on the bridge of the Starship Enterprise. It is out of control. Now, when the pandarnit happened, My friend Ray Tezzi, you know, and Philo's friend, was telling me, yeah, it's time for me to close shop. I can't pay for anything, blah, 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 boo-hoo, which is, okay, understandable. And he got, you know, a little bit of money here and there from people. But because it was a business, he ran it as a non-for-profit. So then I got woman who's a sister of the East to help with paperwork. And that's actually one of his volunteers, Ashley, to basically turn him into a true non-for-profit. So now we can get grants and subsidies. And the mission statement, you know, to my understanding, to what I remember, instead of just being a little studio and like, hey, look at us fans, we built this, la-di-da, the goal is to help underprivileged young people learn how to make a television show as if they were professional. So as grants come in,
that's kind of an awesome goal.
Imagine you and your son going to Kingsland, Georgia, and having a weekend course where your son learns how to write a script or shoot a camera or do a little chroma key special effect, you know, something fun, and has maybe a minute tape to go home with, you know, and it's covered by grants and gifts and things like that. Or you could, you know, buy a session. And we can also create educational products. So, for example, the history of money. So imagine Star Trek talking about credits and talking about money when it first started, building up the cryptocurrency, and then theoretical directions where it can go and hypothesize, you know, with what the credits are now, which could be a form of a cryptocurrency. You really think about it, in the old days of America, every town had their own coin, and you would have to do money changing to change it. One town, a coin might be worth more than a different town, depending on their economy and stuff. And it's just like the cryptocurrencies today. It's amazing. You know, so stuff you learn.
Well, especially in ancient times.
Exactly. Well, I think that we're getting to a point right now with maybe some housekeeping, Carl.
So before we do that, you did ask where you can find the animated series of Star Trek, and it's on Paramount. It's available for streaming on Paramount.
Yeah. Okay, so it's up there with Discovery and Picard and all the others. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
I will tell you that if you get a Fire Stick or a Roku or something like that, usually you get those streaming services for free. So,
yeah. By the way,
as far as Star Trek continues,
you're an adorable human
being.
Everyone likes you.
As far as Star Trek continues, you can watch those on YouTube. They're all there. All 11.
For free.
So,
awesome.
Very cool.
Yeah. I think.
Okay, so I guess we're going to go into housekeeping now, correct?
What does that mean?
Yes.
I want to clean
that
my
means
room.
I get to promote our own shit. As far as Deviant Legion, this is what we have planned. On Friday, we're having a show with the ISF podcast with Incredibly Strange Films. And we feature regional filmmakers. And we will have a good friend of mine by the name of Joe Mew. He has a film out called The Stoop. He's out. He does his work out of Cleveland. And he's done several things, including, the one massacre one, the horror convention massacre, which is something he did a number of years ago with Bori Ackerman. But he has a number of things that he's doing now. And so we'll have him. On Saturday, we are doing a commentary watch on our commentary watch series of films that are available free for streaming. We're going to be doing a commentary watch on one of my favorite films, and that would be 200 Motels, Frank Zappa.
Woo.
So we'll be doing that. we have upcoming
a good question on the ISF page, and now we have to watch this movie for our commentary watch this weekend.
This is true. Hey, you give me an idea, I run with it. What can I tell you? So also we have upcoming, we will be having Stephen Lack, best known perhaps as the lead actor of Scanners, but really great artist. I don't know if you know Stephen or not, but Stephen has several of his paintings in galleries and museums all over the world. He's got a new book coming out of his paintings, a coffee table book. And we'll be having him on. We also have we had to cancel a show, and we're going to redo it. Richard Rush passed away, and we're going to have a show now that my guest, who was a stuntman on The Stuntman, Gary Warner Kent, when we had it scheduled, he had to go into the hospital. But he's now out and recovering. We'll be able to do that probably in early June. We have several other things planned. We're going to be doing our first Zoom interview with the writer of Pontypool and the trilogy, both the author of the books and the screenwriter, and that's Tony Burgess, and that will be scheduled in June. And we've got
Tony Burgess, author of the Beasley Mayhem series that was turned into the movie Pontypool. I'm so stoked about that one.
Okay, and also on May 28th, we're going to have Joe Lansdale, author Joe Lansdale, with us. And Joe is a good friend, been on the podcast a number of years, and he has a new book coming out. And actually, it will be premiered and published on the 28th, and that is Blood Moon. And so we'll be talking to Joe on about his new novel and his new projects that he's got going on now that COVID seems to be flying the coop as we speak, hopefully. And so we have numerous other things going on. We have more commentary watches coming and such, but we're busy people. And of course, let's not forget, we also have Adam Ferenc, Cathode Ray Mission. He's taking off this week, but he'll be back next week. So we've got good stuff happening, and we'll figure it out from there.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I think we're okay.
Well, we love you guys so much, and thank you for coming on the show tonight and letting us chat your heads off.
We're talking for another half hour, so you're stuck with us.
Oh, okay. I've been stuck with
you. Thank you very, very much. Really appreciate you coming on, and it was a great show. Thanks so much. You guys are
awesome. Well, Philo, I just realized they're in control of the show. Damn it, they can hang up on us anytime.
Well, then politely
like
say
you,
goodbye.
Philo. By the way, no matter what happens, always remember you're loved. I forgot to talk about the third board game, Unsolved Atrocities, where you actually play a detective trying to solve a cold case.
Well,
nice.
We're going to have you back on the show to talk about that. So I will talk to you about that soon, and love you guys, everybody.
By the way,
a great night.
You need to sing happy birthday to Philo because you just had a birthday. So if you don't, then you're mean.
Oh, no. That is not Rachel. That is me. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday, dear Philo. Happy birthday to you and many more.
Thank you very much. Thank you. I'm 64 now.
I'm right behind you. I'm 63, so yeah.
Yeah. Rachel's the baby.
All right, folks, I think it's time to say goodnight.
All right. Thank you for the privilege, and till the next time, everybody. And thank you, and
absolutely,
may your lives be less boring than ours, but not as scary.
All right. Good night, everyone. Thanks for listening.
Good night.
Thank you for allowing us on your show.
Absolutely. More than welcome, and you're always welcome back.
Yay!